beautiful. Amazing what four hands can do on a piano. Very nice. I did want to mention about this hall, and that is at the picnic, I was talking to Chad Smith, and we were talking about, something came up anyway, about a hall and having church, and he may have brought it up, but he said, well, Mr. Sargent, what about that, what about Kingdom City? They have that hall. And I said, he said, that's 54 country, name the place or whatever, but he referred to this place. And the owner of the place, actually the it's a Living Church of God member's son who actually owns this place. It's a limited liability LLC, is that what they call it? But anyway, I thought at that time, you know, it doesn't look like we're going to open anytime soon at DMC because of this 6-foot spacing. We can get 38 people, I believe, into the hall that we usually meet in. So we've been thinking about, you know, space, where can we go? And even if we go to some of the spaces, the amount of money they want to charge is astronomical compared to what we are paying at DMC. And so on a Monday, I think, the day after that picnic, or the Tuesday, maybe it was Wednesday anyway, I called and talked to the son's father, who's in the church, and he said, sure, absolutely, come on over, we can walk through the place. And so Eric Wilson and I came together, was it last Monday or so, Tuesday, I think, and walked through the place and looked at everything, and I thought, this is going to work really well. And he said, you want keys? I'll give you the keys right away. You can make keys. You know, you're welcome to come here. You can come here as often as you want. And, you know, we'll only charge you $2,000 a meeting. No, it wasn't that at all. It was a very good price. And a lot of chairs, a lot of space, and we thought, no smoking in this place at all. How often do you go to a dance hall where they don't allow smoking? Well, you don't go to a dance hall that often, but I don't think probably it's very often, unless the rules have changed. But whatever the case, God provided a place, and I'm glad that Chad even brought it up, because I never would have thought of it at all. It just didn't come up. So God does provide, and we are very thankful that we have this hall. The title of the sermon that I'm giving today is called The Big Picture. The reason being because we are so locked into 4 months, 3 months of this, the virus, it is easy to get our mind on just ourselves and our own little world. It's interesting when you compare your mind, my mind, with God's mind. And we think that from the time we're born, we're looking out and up. We actually don't see that very, very far, that is, when we're first born. I hear that our vision increases very quickly, and we can see quite a distance not too long after we've been born. But at the start, we'd see just a few feet away, maybe a couple feet away. We certainly would comprehend and understand our parents' voice, who we've been listening to for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months, whatever it would be. But again, the point is that when we're born, our world is very tight. It's very limited. And as we grow up, it's still very limited. I think back of the way I was thinking when I was 18 years old, and it was pretty selfish. It was still a world that was small. It was not a big world. Growing up in Montana, I thought when I got up in the morning in the wintertime, it was 42 degrees below zero, I thought the whole world is this way, just like this, 42 below zero. I didn't even think in my mind that it was not that cold. And it's like everybody, all the Eskimos live this way, and all the Floridians live this way, and the Houstonians and the Louisianians or whatever live this way. And it's like, no, that's not quite it. But the point is, again, we live in our world. We only see from our point of view. And as we get older, that doesn't change. But again, we are very short-sighted, so to speak, as physical human beings. We do know the scripture, and I hadn't thought of it before. We could go to it, but I won't. In 1 Corinthians, I believe it is, where God tells us that eye has not seen and ear has not heard at all what God has in store for us. We just don't comprehend. I thought it was really good to take a look at just our life and what our life is like. This is something that came from one of our, there's about five ladies or six ladies in the church that are all about the same age, all just right around 75, 76, 77. And one of the ladies, I'm not sure which one started this, but she sent something called, and it's an acronym, I guess we would say, it's AAADD. And it's like, well, what in the world is ADD, AAADD? It says, know the symptoms. And it's we are thankful there's a name for this disorder. It's called age-activated attention deficit disorder. And this is how it manifests. Now, this is going to take a few moments, but I think it gets the point across of our life and the way we live and how myopic we are, or myopic. So I decide to water my garden. As I turn on the hose in the driveway, I look over at my car and decide it needs washing. As I start toward the garage, I notice mail on the porch table that I brought up from the mailbox earlier, so I decide to go through the mail before I wash the car. I lay my keys on the table, put the junk mail in the garbage can under the table, and notice that the can is full. I decide to put the bills back on the table, take the garbage out first. But then I think, since I'm going to be near the mailbox, when I take out the garbage anyway, I may as well pay the bills first. Take my checkbook off the table, see that there's only one check left. My extra checks are in my desk in the study. I go inside the house to my desk, where I find the can of Pepsi. That's the only problem with this write-up here. I had been drinking. I'm going to look for my checks, but first I need to push the carrot juice can aside. We'll go that way, so that I don't accidentally knock it over. The carrot juice can is getting warm, and I decide to put it in the refrigerator to keep it cold. As I head toward the kitchen with the carrot juice, a vase of flowers on the counter catches my eye, and they need watering. So I put the carrot juice on the counter and discover my reading glasses that I've been searching for all morning long. I decide to better put them back on my desk. I told you this would take a moment or two. But first I'm going to water the flowers. I set the glasses back down on the counter, fill a container with water, suddenly spot the TV remote. Someone left it on the kitchen table. I realize that tonight when we go to watch TV, I'll be looking for the remote, but I won't remember that it's on the kitchen table, so I decide to put it back in the den where it belongs. But first I'll water the flowers. I pour some water in the flowers, but quite a bit of it spills on the floor. I set the remote back on the table, get some towels and wipe up the spill. Do you think you're living kind of in this world here now, that this world is really closed in? Then I head down the hall trying to remember what I was planning to do. At the end of the day, the car isn't washed. The bills aren't paid. There's a warm glass of carrot juice sitting on the counter. Flowers don't have enough water. There still is only one check in my checkbook. I can't find the remote. I can't find my glasses. I don't remember what I did with the car keys. Then when I try to figure out why nothing got done today, I'm really baffled because I know I was busy, but I'm really tired. I realize this is a serious problem. I'll try to get some help for it, but first I'll check my email. Do me a favor, forward this message to everyone you know. Now, in preparing this sermon, I thought, you know, what Marion got on email the other day to me really shows our life. And I suppose when we get older, that's why you don't get as much done, you know, when we're retired from work, because this is what we're doing. But it's like everything is really close, and what's close to us? Well, the TV, the radio, the media, the news is close to us. And the way we think is definitely influenced by our surroundings, isn't it? Definitely influenced by our surroundings. What we get done is influenced by what we see to be done. You know, if we don't hone in on something and say, I'm going to do that right now, we can go from project to project and get nothing done. Computers are bad that way too, because if you're a computer person, you're on the computer, there's this stuff on the side. And it's your interests. You've gone in there once before, so they know what you're interested in. and it's Kansas City football team. It is somebody breaking the new 800-meter record. It is who first ran under the four-minute mile. You can imagine what I have looked at, you know, what I type in to see, because you're interested in this, and it's all there. They know what you're interested in. It's like, oh, I'll just take a moment and go see, you know, that new 800-meter record. Or something comes in from one of the kids, Cammy or a sailor, and then you go off on that. So our world is pretty close, isn't it? It is highly influenced by everything that is going around us. So I've labeled this not just the big picture, but the big picture applying God's knowledge. The big picture applying God's knowledge. What comes into our mind when we hear some of the following phrases? So I thought I would pick about seven phrases and just to help us think about what actually this spawns, I guess, when we hear this one word or this phrase, we would recognize what we are doing with our daily activities, the news, happenings, or whatever. So I'm going to start with 9/11. What comes into your mind? You might think about it for a moment, and maybe I'll help you along. I don't think of 7/11, and I don't think of 7-Eleven, the store. 9/11, I think of those two buildings coming down. And then I think of the Saudi Arabians. And then I think we need to protect ourselves. And I think, they almost crashed into our military headquarters, of all things. They took it out. They did. Almost took out the White House. So my mind goes in that direction, and my mind becomes a little angry at Saudi Arabia and what they're doing behind the scenes, because we trust our allies, the Saudi Arabians. And your mind just starts working over all of these things. I don't know if your mind works that way, but mine does. Before I come back to this, I'm going to go to number two, abortion. What do we think about with abortion? Well, we think definitely it should not be allowed. We think of the Supreme Court rulings of the past, and maybe how more of a conservative Supreme Court will pass a law, will overturn Roe versus Wade. Was that it? Something like that, years and years ago. So we start thinking in those terms, and then we started thinking maybe of President Trump and putting another conservative on the court. So we have a 5-2, 6-1, or 7-0, or whatever it might be in the future. Is it 7 on the Supreme Court, or is there more? Maybe more. But whatever the case, we're thinking now, our mind is associating with these things, and we're thinking, you know, we are pro-life in the church. We are against taking a baby's life. That's where we go. And then we think also of some of the latest happenings where there was a guy who came and said, this was a representative, state representative perhaps, I think it was, and he's saying, you know, he had a law that he was going to come up with, and that is after a child is born, the parents could decide within a week whether that child should live. So it was like, man, where are we going? And then you think with the same guy, what they also found out was he painted his face black when he was a teenager and went to a party, and all of a sudden you hear nothing else about his abortion, actually his baby-killing rule, and all of a sudden all you hear is that he painted his face black, and he's getting in trouble for that. And you think, well, what happened to the abortion part? What happened to, you know, the idea that he wants to kill his child? So these things come up in our mind, don't they? And we think, oh, we get angry. So it's abortion. That's where I go with abortion. Maybe that's where you go to. Number three, Black Lives Matter has been in the news. And of course, Black Lives do matter. They do. And all lives matter. We do know that. With that, we have a grandson who just became a police officer. He just graduated from the academy in Durango, Colorado. And so that was kind of on our mind, too, with Black Lives Matter because all of a sudden our son, grandson, is in danger's way. Because when we think of what could happen to him, somebody coming up behind him and pointing a pistol at his neck or back of his head and just pulling the trigger for no reason at all, except that they hate the fact that a police officer was responsible for the death of George Floyd and others. But with that, then, our mind goes to maybe the protests, the riots, and the looters. And that's where we go with that, knowing that Black lives absolutely do matter, that everybody is a child, potential spirit being, no matter our race. We are against racism, but our mind goes, in this direction or that, and this is the way we think. Number four, the United States national debt, which is now $22 trillion. One-third of that debt is owned by foreign countries. 75% is public debt. Of course, there are foreign public interest in our debt. But we think, man, we're never going to get out of debt. And if you read the article on our U.S. national debt, you read that we're not in trouble as long as Americans have confidence that they can get their money. Because, again, two-thirds is owned by Americans, American companies, and a number of other interests, I guess we would say, that I don't need to bring out because I actually forgot which ones they were. But that being said, we think, $22 trillion. And then what we think of is that's a lot of money, and are we going to be safe maybe if we're on Social Security? Are they going to be able to pay us 10 years from now? These thoughts go through our head, and I don't know where you run with that totally, but to me, it's just like, how in the world is that ever going to be paid off? Number five, taxes. Then you think about Democrats, because they're going to raise taxes. And then you think, why do I have to pay all these taxes? And then you find out in the news that 1 million dead people were sent a stimulus check, which amounted to $1.2 billion. And those types of things, again, we read these things. We may be listening to talk radio or some of this is being spoken. And it's like, I don't even want to pay taxes. I'm the king's son. I think that way. I'm the king's son, and the king's son shouldn't have to pay taxes. I think Jesus Christ said that, when he was told, or asked to pay a tax. And basically, that'd be the only reason that I'd really want to go fishing is to, bring up some money to pay my taxes. That's the story in the Bible. But you think of taxes, and then you think Democrats, and then you think of socialism, and then you think of, they're taking money from these people to pay these people, and you think Nazism, communism, this all comes up, doesn't it? And you're probably getting tired of hearing all of this. Division. What do you think of division? And then coronavirus, 6 feet apart, masks, and then masks or no masks? Do masks do any good? Do you have to have a mask, or is a mask actually hurt you? 6 foot spacing, is that okay? What about when we sing? We are singing and those droplets are heading out. We close down the gym and then we're told, no, it's good to go to the gym because the heat goes up to 130 degrees and you're going to kill the virus. I mean, you can just, all of these things, and then you hear people, arguing about the virus. See, it never ends, does it? But it's all here and now. In all of this, I really haven't brought anything about God's knowledge in here, have I? So let's go back. And I think we've had enough. Probably at number four, you wanted me to quit. But at number one, let's go to 9/11. What do you think of 9/11? Well, let's go to Luke 13 and verse 4. Luke 13 and verse 4. I think there were something like just short of maybe 5,000 people, was it? Or 3,000 people killed on 9/11. But notice Luke 13 and verse 4, the way Jesus Christ thought. Luke 13 and verse 4. You may know where I'm going with this. He said in verse 4, what about those 18 on whom the tower in Siloam fell and killed them? What do you think we should do about that? Don't you think there should be more rulings on architecture and engineering? Don't you think we need to get the government to start, you know, making sure that if you have concrete, that you put some rebar in it? I understand in some of our third world countries that there's no rebar in concrete. That's why when an earthquake comes along. So where does our mind go? Oh, man, that is horrible. 18 people. Tower of Siloam. Jesus Christ's mind went where? His mind was not on the here and now at all. His mind went somewhere else. His mind went to seek you first the kingdom of God. He just thought in a different dimension. He thought in a different plane. He didn't think, well, something needs to be changed in this society, because he knew that there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that we can do to change the governments of this world, the cities of this world, the health of this world. When, you know, I think in terms of with the coronavirus, I'll jump ahead a little bit, but I think in terms of why aren't people drinking more carrot juice? Actually, I didn't think specifically about that, but I thought, you know, if we were a healthier people, that would really help a lot of people to be able to go through all types of flus. My mind, however, did go on that one to quarantining, proper quarantining, because there is a way to properly quarantine. But we all have to start thinking, when we get so wrapped up in society, that, you know, the kingdom of God is going to bring the restoration of all things. There is going to be a restoration of everything that is physically a problem. Seems to me in Romans, it's all creation groans over what's happening in the society. And we have to think, am I getting too locked into, did Christ feel sorry for those 18? Yes, he did. Did his heart go out and cry? You know, inside it, everything going around him, the Galileans that are mentioned here in Luke 13, and the answer is, yeah, he did. He felt badly. Remember, he did say, when he's standing outside of Jerusalem, oh, how I wish that I could have brought you under my wings, so to speak, and I could have helped you and saved you from a lot of problems that were coming along. So that tenderness that needs to be in all of us must be there. By looking just at this society, we can just become angry. We can go the opposite way of where we should be going. We can be angry at city government. We can be angry at state government. We can be angry at our own home government, I hope, at times. But we can be angry at the physical. And it's not that we shouldn't be doing something physically to make sure that the bad doesn't happen. But at the same time, where did Christ's mind go? It wasn't on, you know, that building could have been built better. He didn't go that way at all. He said, do you think that they were the worse sinners than all other men who dwelt in Jerusalem? That's what he said. Were they the worst? And he said, look, unless you repent, you will so likewise perish. He was thinking in, a different dimension. They didn't understand that he was saying, look, in the final outcome of humanity, if humanity doesn't repent and change and accept him as Savior and do what God tells us to do, then mankind is going to perish. So he was looking at this huge, gigantic, big picture, and he was using the knowledge that he had. Okay, what about abortion? Where do our minds go? Well, I've already mentioned where probably our minds go, but let's go to Deuteronomy 12. Deuteronomy 12. And I'm sure there are other scriptures that I could use, but we know the children of Israel were going to be going into the promised land in a very short period of time. And Moses, as God's instrument, was warning them that when they go into those nations, they should not follow other gods. This is Deuteronomy 12 and verse 29. Deuteronomy 12 and verse 29. When the Lord your God cuts off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you displace them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself. Now, we all might ask, well, why am I going there when it comes to abortion? Take heed to yourself that they are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? So God is leading Moses to explain to them that the end result of serving other gods will end in disaster over a period of time, even to the point, notice in verse 31, they burn their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. Abortion is idolatry. Abortion is a worship of our own body, a worship of our own lifestyle, because a child is only going to get in the way, right? Abortion is idolatry, and more, it is. But it is definitely idolatry. It's coming up with a decision that I can decide what I want to do with my own child. I was introduced to a guy named, is it David Shapiro? Is that the man's first name? He's a Jew. He's 32 years old, 17 years old. I think he was one of the first broadcasters, syndicated broadcaster perhaps. But how many of you have heard of David Shapiro? If that's the right name, it's close, yeah. Okay, the man is a genius, but I was introduced to him when we were, I think Eric Wilson mentioned his name, and Mr. Froge also. Mr. Froge was there too, by the way. We were walking through the place. I'm sorry that I left his name out, but he was here as we were talking to Randy. But on the way back, we tuned in to on YouTube. You can hear what he has to say. And the subject of abortion was there. In fact, I came home and opened YouTube up, and Marion listened to some of it also. But on the subject of abortion, it's your own body. Okay, you can do with your body and with what comes out of your body as you wish. And he's really a sharp guy. He comes right down to the basic premise, I guess, that you should build your morality. And in this case it was, well, you know, we have laws that if someone has a dog in their backyard and they're mistreating the dog, then you don't just say, well, that's okay, it's not my dog, it's not my yard, and so we're not going to do anything about it. In fact, people are more concerned, some people who are worshiping other gods are more concerned about their dogs than they are a new child that comes along, or a being impregnated and making a decision to abort. But it's like, no, our moral structure tells us that we do intervene when other people take the life of a dog, or in this case, a child. And he's very sharp, because the question then is asked, well, they're not a child yet. And he has some very good answers to that. But when we think of abortion, what God wants us to think of is all of those, you know, it's not wrong what we're thinking in so many cases. I'm not saying that what we come up with is wrong. But, you know, if we go to the heart of it, it's like, you know, it's going to take the kingdom. It's going to take all mankind worshiping the true God so that situations like abortions are solved, that every life literally does matter. And that is, all mankind will worship the true God. Number three, Black Lives Matter. What do we do with that one? Well, all lives matter. We don't go with rioting and getting upset. Now, should we be upset? And the answer is yes. But in order to have peace of mind, in order to live in this society, and be able to, like Lot did, you know, kind of be at the edge of Sodom. He ended up in Sodom and Gomorrah, or in Sodom at least. He ended up in the city. But he still, on a daily basis, was just anguishing about what was going on in the city. That's what God tells us. He was a righteous man. And it really got to him. Evidently, it didn't get to his wife as much, but it did get to him. And we should, just be sighing and crying, God tells us. We should be doing that, but it should immediately lead to, here's the problem. And with Black Lives Matter, the problem goes back, and we could argue about it, slavery and being sold into slavery, but, you might blame it on the people who sold their own people, but, with drugs, you can't just blame the drug dealers. There has to be somebody who buys the drugs, okay? So there's problems on every side, and basically it's like this is not God's world. You might say, well, slavery's okay and in the Hebrew society, but, brethren, not the way that we've had slavery in the United States, not the way we handle slavery with human beings who are not in God's nation. It's a totally different, completely, totally different set of standards as to whether you are a slave or not. For the problem we have in all the nations, it takes God's kingdom to restore it, God's kingdom, where every nation will have its own boundaries. But what I go to here for the United States, instead of thinking, looting, the problems, of human beings, we go to Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28 is where I go. And in Deuteronomy 28, you find what happens when a nation is not obeying God's commandments. So we don't go, we've got all of these riots and it's the fault of and whatever we say. We should come to Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43, where it says, "The alien or the stranger who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower." And in verse 45, it says, "All of these curses are going to come because you did not obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments." So that's where we should go with it. Look, sure, there are these problems that we have in society, and it's a curse because we're not obedient. If we would be obeying God's commandments as a nation, then these types of problems would never have existed. The climate would never be there, although you think it's not that there wouldn't be an alien or a foreigner or another race among you. It would be that there would still be with Israel, the Israelites ruling. And among all nations, it would be proper rulership if each nation would obey the commandments. The Bible doesn't say you can't have strangers or others living in your nation. Overall, we know people will be in their boundaries. And what do we know? We look darkly into what's going to happen, so we can't answer all those questions. But the fact is, we have the curses because of disobedience. So we need to go a step farther. I guarantee you most of talk show hosts, and I'll listen to maybe a tidbit of some when I'm in the car, mostly I'll listen to what's going to happen in Kansas City. This is station 610, and how they solve all the problems with the Kansas City Royals and all the potential problems with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I stop and I listen to some of that, and I think their whole day is being wasted. They're talking about football and baseball and who should be traded and who should not be traded. And it's like, how can they do this, talking about this all day long? I was going over to get something the other day, and I tuned in to 610. I don't listen to it very long because you can't. And the fellow was talking about how horrible the Kansas City 2012 Chiefs were and how he loved it because they were fighting so much. And I went, there you go. Mankind, human beings love the fight. This guy was getting fired this one week and this guy another week. And then he said, he said, and then the owner was getting fired, and I thought, oh, brother, how can an owner get fired if he owns the team? So it's like these guys just get going, and they don't even make sense after a while. I listened for about 2 minutes on that one, and I don't listen very long. But I'm just saying we get locked into listening and hearing these things, and it's like, you know, we need to be thinking on a different dimension. Not that we shouldn't know what's going on, but we need to be thinking on a different dimension. So number four, the U.S. national debt, Deuteronomy 15 and verse 6. Should we even have a debt? You know, we can come up with, well, people aren't paying their taxes, or there's misspending in government, or we need to get government in order and get somebody in there that knows how to spend our money properly and is not wasting our money on all of these programs that end up in nothing, you know, finding out. Well, the old joke when I was growing up was spending all this money on the sex life of a tsetse fly. How many of you remember that? Just, it's like, oh. But here's what God says in Deuteronomy 15 and verses 1 through 6. At the end of every year, you shall grant a release of 7 years, a release of debts. And this is the form of the release, and it tells us, of a foreigner, you may require it, but your hand shall release what is owed by your brother. Verse 4, except when there's maybe no poor among you, for the Lord will greatly bless you in the land. Verse 5, only if you carefully obey the Lord your God to observe with care all of these commands which I command you today, for the Lord your God will bless you. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. So where does our mind go? Well, not misspending. It comes back to, and I'm not saying misspending isn't involved in breaking God's commandments. No doubt, misspending habits, not taking care of our national budget the way it should be taken care of, is because of, you know, direct broken laws that have to do with, you know, the way we're spending our money. But it does come back, once again, to obedience. We should only be lending, and it says we should not borrow. So when it comes to the national debt, again, it comes back to obedience to God's law. And then we think, you know, nothing's going to change until Jesus Christ returns to the earth. The song that we sang by Jonathan Bolton, what his name is? Yeah, Bowles, Jonathan Bowles. I think it was the third song we sang, is a sermon all in itself, because it's talking about, of course, the return of Jesus Christ. But our mind, again, should be going somewhere, and we want to be able to catch our mind. And to get upset for a while is not wrong. You know, keep it to 5 seconds, 7 seconds, whatever, but keep it short, because it can consume us, and we don't want to be consumed by what's happening in society when we know it is not God's society in the first place. Remember, the sermon is supposed to be the big picture, applying God's knowledge, to think in the way that Jesus Christ was thinking while he was on the earth. And you know that he understood what was happening with the dictators that were up there in Rome. He understood what was taking place in local governments. He understood the complete, total tyranny and dictatorial powers that were ruining society at the time, and everybody was looking out for their own interest. He understood all of that, but he always went to a greater degree. He didn't take Pilate and say, Pilate, now I want to give you some help here. You know what you've been doing, Pilate? He didn't go that direction at all. When Pilate said, are you a king? And he said, well, that's why I was born. But he also said, you know, Pilate, you would not have the power that you have unless God had given that to you. Even he went to something bigger. And we should do that too. When a president is elected, we should say, you know, that president would not have the power that he has unless God has given him that power. We always go to, look where are we living? Nebuchadnezzar, let this dream be one of your enemies, Daniel said. Daniel was very wise. He didn't just come out and say, well, here's what the dream says, and it's because, Daniel, you've been, you know, making all these mistakes, and you've been really bungling things up. He said, may this be a dream for your enemies, because it was going to be a curse. But we realize God had put him in office. That is Nebuchadnezzar. So again, we go to a different thinking, and I don't always go that way. We turn on the news in the morning. I like to catch the news from about 8 o'clock or 8:05 to 8:10, somewhere around there. Or I've got a little icon on my phone. This is Marion's phone because I had to let you know what AAADD was it? Something like that was all about. But on my phone's an icon, so I can open it up and I can hit the icon and it'll give me the 5 most important news items of the day. And it's usually not about the Kansas City Royals either. It's just about something happening in the world, something happening in the United States that's big. So I can do that too. But sometimes we really get wrapped up, don't we, in today's world news. What was it that we said years ago? Is a Plain Truth magazine, the World Tomorrow broadcast in French. I know it in French. It was Le Monde d'avenir, débat patien vous présente la bonne nouvelle de Le Monde d'avenir, les prophéties de Le Monde d'aujourd'hui. And that's how I know it. That's all I know in French, by the way. I know it was really impressive. Wow, he can speak French. That's it. I just memorized that over and over. But basically, it was the introduction to the World Tomorrow broadcast. And it was Herbert W. Armstrong presents to you the good news of the world tomorrow, La Bonne Nouvelle de Le Monde coming up, and the prophecies of the world today. And basically it was the news and the events of today in the light of Bible prophecy. Remember that? So you have the Bible shining down on the newspaper, so to speak, and the Bible is shining down on it, so we're thinking in terms of what the Bible says about this, not just what's going on, and then we get all upset. I think probably some of you probably have said, well, you know, you've got your point across, you could probably sit down now, but there's a little bit more. I won't necessarily go on with everything else. We went to 4, we could go to taxes and Democrats, we could go to Samuel. And I won't turn there, but guess what? Samuel was told by God to tell those who wanted a physical king. So here's what you're going to get. Your kids are going to go to war, and the government is going to take 10% for this, and they're going to take 10% for that. They're going to take 20% of your income. And what do we have? Well, the government is taking it, and if we didn't have a physical king, we wouldn't be paying that much. In other words, that's a curse. The 10% to 10% to the government, that's a curse. So you could go to 1 Samuel, that would be in chapter 10. I could, chapter 8, verse 10, when Samuel had to tell them that if they're not choosing a judge, it's going to be far worse than having two kids take over that God will take care of, because Samuel's kids were not very good. We know that God would have taken care of them. The nation would have been better off. And when you come then to something I didn't even come up with, but division in the church. We could say, well, we're divided about coronavirus. We're divided about what we should do. But, you know, when I think of division in the church, what I think of is there must be division among us so that those who are approved will be found out. So that's 1 Corinthians chapter 11. So there's always going to be division. Marion and I were talking the other day, or I was talking to someone, and I was thinking, You know, with the books of the Bible, when you go to the books that are written to the individuals or the books that are written to the churches, there are so many problems that are being addressed. There's always going to be division, but it's the way we handle it. We can have a right attitude. We can have a concern for our neighbor. We can love one another. We can bear with one another or not. It's just the way we handle it, and that is so very important. So I'm going to come to this number seven, coronavirus, as we wind up and ask again, what comes to our mind with coronavirus? Well, you can read all types of things about it. I was getting my tires aligned. Actually, I was getting the car aligned. The tires aligned with the car, so it actually goes down the road straight. And it didn't after they aligned it, by the way. It's pulling to the right, you know. Let go of the steer. Get in the left-hand lane where it's supposed to pull to the left a little bit. Let go of the steering wheel, and you'll be in the ditch in 5 seconds, and my car still. But that's society. I'm not supposed to think about that too long, so what is the spiritual thought I should have on that? I've got a really good story to tell you about my fuel filter, but I won't. So, you know, expect something to be done improperly. Expect it to be done wrong. Coronavirus, is it about masks? Is it about whether you should, you know, stand 6 feet apart? It does come spiritually down to the quarantine. We can go that way, and we should. Proper quarantining. We really should feel badly about those who have the coronavirus and have died from it. You know, you think you're older, you're in a rest home, you should be able to live the rest of your life out, you know, in peace and tranquility with your children visiting or being in a home with your children, whatever the case, wherever you are, and not have to die of a flu. It is horrible that we have so many deaths in our rest homes, in our nursing homes. Or other names that we apply to it, but when we're older, where we go there and live out the rest of our life, it's horrible that we would die that way. But at the same time, there's proper quarantining that should overall prevent that, shouldn't it? So we do go there, and that's a biblical thought. It is proper quarantining to protect all of us, to protect our older people. Because we do feel, I wouldn't want my grandmother, my grandfather, my dad, or my mom to die from flu. And I don't think any of us would. But we have to think of Matthew 24. Let's go there. Matthew 24, verses 4 through 9. And I could go to the beast and false prophet. And maybe I should mention probably something that hasn't entered your mind or that has entered your mind, and that is, when I think of the governments having the power that they do to actually shut down, if they want, an entire city, to close the roads into the city, because those laws are on the books of the health departments. They have the right to quarantine a city and not even let cars come in. The Columbia Health Department, from what I've read, has the power to do that. That's been on the books. To protect a city, they can do that. And that is actually it's a loving rule. It's not a bad rule, if it were that bad, to protect your city from something from the outside. So these aren't horrible. These are quarantine rules, but it is amazing. Still, the power to do anything seemingly that they want to do. Meaning to me, and my mind goes, and your mind probably does too, to the beast power. For the beast has the power to keep you from buying and selling if you don't have the mark of the beast. Government. The government can keep you from actually buying and selling. Someone mentioned to me what could be vaccinations. If you would choose not to be vaccinated, you would not be able to go into a store because you haven't been vaccinated and you couldn't buy and sell. Now, I think it's going to go beyond that. We've always said it's religious, tied to religion, tied to the Sabbath, tied to the holy days, and I think it is. where there's going to be the people of God who are the ones who are sought after. And we would be the ones, God's people, who are Sabbatarians, have God's Spirit. Bottom line, God's people who have the Spirit of God. They're the ones going to be picked on. So Matthew 24, verse 4. Matthew 24 and verse 4. Jesus said to them, when they asked the question, what is the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Verse 3. Jesus said, take heed that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name saying, I'm the Christ, and will deceive many. And you're going to hear wars, rumors of war. Don't be troubled. All these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Verse 7, nation will rise up against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. World War I, World War II, and all the world wars previous and the wars after. There will be famines, and there will be pestilences and earthquakes in various places. There's going to be pestilences. There will be viruses that come along that kill masses of people. It's happened before. It's happened in the Middle Ages. I think it was because of fleas, and they blamed the Jews back in the Middle Ages because they weren't getting the plague, the Black Plague, at that time. But whatever the case, there will be. And we're going through a time of, I guess you could say, pestilence. At least a virus that kills. And we know that. And it is a killing virus. Some have said it's not worse than any other, but it does hit the respiratory system. And if a person has an immune system that is compromised, then it can be very deadly very quick. In 1918, people died within 24 hours of getting that virus, the Spanish flu, Spanish influenza, or what it's called now today, for those who know, it's called the swine flu, because it starts with swine and birds. But that being the case, notice what it goes on to say, because when we think of pestilences, here's where our mind should go also, and that is, these are the beginning of sorrows, then they will be. After pestilences, earthquakes in various places, then what comes next? Then they'll deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. He's talking to those who have God's Spirit. So what we know is coming, who knows exactly when, but we know after the plague, certainly there will be tribulation, and God's people will be picked upon. They will kill you. You will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. That has something to do with the beast's power, too. If you don't follow the beast and the image of the beast, then we're going to be cut off. Then many will be offended. So what we see now is in verse 10, many will be offended and will betray one another. Now, the sermonette talked about, loving one another. John 13, how do we love one another? Well, if we love one another, we will not be the ones who will be offended. We will not be the ones who betray one another. We will not be the ones who hate one another. There will be many false prophets who will rise up and deceive many, but we won't follow them because we have the love of God, which also includes keeping the commandments, but a love for God and a love for our fellow man. He who endures to the end, verse 12, because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. And that love is agape love. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. So our mind should at least think about what happens after pestilence. It's here. We can argue about where it comes from, what we should do, how to protect one another, and we should strive to protect one another as much as we can. We do not want to put anybody in harm's way. But at the same time, we realize that's just the beginning, and coming up is something far worse. But if we have that love for one another, there's not going to be the lawlessness. There's not going to be the betrayal on our part. There's not going to be the offense on our part. and that's where we should go. So, big picture, do we think about God's mind? Do we think about what the Bible says? Can we think definitely of sighing and crying for those, and not just think, but actually sigh and cry for those who are hurting, because that shows a love for mankind. But, and I don't have that love like I should, I just don't. And I know I don't, and I know I need to grow in that love. But can we think of sighing and crying for mankind and then realize, too, that we have to love one another. We can't be lawless. We have to endure to the end with the love of God in us. Otherwise, all the arguments, all the ideas we have about everything going on in society and how society should run is all going to be in vain. We have to think in terms of the restoration of God's kingdom on this earth.